Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of Goodwill Wrestling. This is Will, and I'm here with my co-host, Rob Naylor. Rob, how you doing tonight?
Hey, doing good, man. How you doing?
Pretty good, man. I was going to use the Bullet Boys as our intro this week, but I didn't want to pay the 9 cents it took to download the song. So
dude, you made a mistake. Also, why didn't you do the X-Pac Run DMC theme, man? Come on, no, man. He never came out of that song.
I know, man, but I figure since we've talked about Dr. Death enough in the last couple of weeks that we could at least use Dr. Death's theme song, because I didn't want to pay the 9 cents for the X-Pac theme either. I also didn't want to pay 9 cents for the Uncle Cracker song.
Oh, so. Fuck that song. But like, I like the way it's like, X-Pac! And then it's like, the King of Rock. I love that shit. I can't do it justice. But they talk about the Boogaloo Flu, and it's really funny. But, yeah, that's a really good theme song. And, yes, people, today we are talking about Sean Waltman, the Lightning Kid, the 1-2-3 Kid, Sick Pac, fucking X-Pac, 1-2-3 Pac. I don't even know what his name is now, but, like, he is the fucking man. He's been in the, he's been back in public eye with his new shoot, recent shoot interview with Kevin Nash. So we're going to talk about old Sean here today and run down his career. And there's nobody on the planet outside of maybe Sean Waltman's mom, I think, that is a bigger fan of that dude than I am. So I'm really looking forward to this one. It was my call. I was like, we got to do a Sean Waltman show. And Will very happily obliged.
Yeah, man, I have no problem with talking about Waltman. But hey, Rob, when was the first time you saw him wrestle or actually even heard about him?
First time I saw him was Global. I remember Global was like the hot thing back in summer of 1991. It came on ESPN every day after school. It started during the summer, which was cool because I got to just see it like every single day, no matter what. So I wasn't doing my homework, but I liked it a lot. There was all kinds of great talent such as Wild Bill Irwin and Rugged Rod Price and Steve Dane. You know the ones, like all those guys are the best. The best one was Tug Taylor, who I thought was Tug Boat for the longest time, because there was two fat guys named Tug Boat in 1991 with beards, and it confused me, despite the fact that I think Tug Boat Thomas, who was the big steel man, Fred Ottman, was like 6'8", and Tug Taylor was like fucking 5'7". Yeah, I saw the Lightning Kid on that show. They did a light heavyweight tournament. They had lots of great light heavyweight wrestlers like Scotty the Body or Scott Anthony, the Handsome Stranger, Brian Adias, Chaz, Jerry Lynn. This was a who's who of junior weights at the time. And Lightning Kid was like the first guy I really saw work kind of Japanese style in wrestling. Like, he was really awesome. He was the skinniest wrestler I had ever seen at that point. He seriously had to weigh, like, 112 pounds when he debuted for Global. I mean, he was really, like, really lean, or bony even, I'd say. He put on way more mass within, like, between 91 and 93. He put on, like, I'd say about 60 pounds, 50 pounds at least. But he was super little, but he did cool karate shit. He did Kawada kicks before I even knew they were called Kawada kicks. He's just very fluid, And he would do, like, all kinds of crazy dives. Like, I remember they had, like, an announcing area, like, to the side, like a stage, an announcing stage. And Mike Pedicino would interview people on it. And he climbed up to the top rope, and he jumped all the way, not all the way past ringside onto the announcing stage, onto Chaz or Jerry Lynn or somebody. But he was wild, man. I remember, I never got the Observer at the time, but looking back at the Observer, you know, he was clearly the star of Global in its infancy days, because it's like, where the hell did this guy come from?
Now, I remember seeing a lot of Global in the last few years. I don't remember watching it when it actually came out. But when I watched Global, I was always struck by how good some of the wrestling could be and how awful some of the wrestling would be. Yeah, I mean, because for every Jerry Lynn Lightning Kid match, you had like a horrible match on top. You know, I know even Eddie Gilbert, you know, one of my favorite wrestlers of all time, was involved in some really bad angles and matches in Global, and it's just one of those feds that, you know, I have to pick and choose what I watch from. It's not like I can watch an episode of NWA from 1986 and just watch whatever episode's thrown at me all the way through. I mean, Global's one of those feds I really have to pick and choose what I want to watch.
Yeah, looking back at it, I think it really kind of sucked. Like, I remember I did a show pretty positively looking back at Global with Vix a couple years ago, but, like, looking back on it now, like, I would probably never rewatch it. Like, there was some good points to it, but honestly, it was, like, shitty. It was, like, Memphis wrestling, but, like the very low impact, no really cool moves at all. But, like, then you had to add, like, fucking no Memphis cool storylines or characters. It was like Memphis wrestling, like, combined with Japanese, complete, no real good storyline type stuff. And the Patriot was all over that shit. He fucking sucked. I remember the Patriot won, like, the North American tournament and, like, the TV tournament. So I was like, fuck the Patriot. He wrestled, like, Al Perez, who also, I remember being all stoked. I'm like, yeah, Al Perez never got his due. No, Al Perez kind of sucked, too, looking back at it. He had a pretty cool character. I liked his promos. And, like, God forbid I say anything bad about the alley copter or the spinning toehold finish. But pretty boring on Global, I can't lie. And Buddy Landell was on there, and I even don't really remember much about Budrow. And I fucking loved him, but I don't know. That even drug him down a little bit. I think it has to do with the fact that that ring was hard as fuck. Like, you could probably kill yourself taking a back bump in that ring, from what people tell me. And
like one of those rings from Mexico or something, yeah.
Yeah, it was the same world-class ring, because you couldn't pull the ring up because there was a chamber underneath the ring.
That's right,
like,
yeah.
So it's like, fuck, you know? I mean, fuck that. So, like, I don't know. It was bad for everybody, but it was probably the worst for the 1-2-3 Kid or the Lightning Kid, because he was taking crazy-ass bumps on that mat. Like, you know, he had to make a name for himself. You have to – sometimes being undersized, you have to – overcompensate. I know full well of. But I don't know. In many ways, but I really always enjoyed the 1-2-3 Kid, and he did it all, man. He was the fucking man in that league. And him and Chaz, I got to talk to Sean about a month and a half ago in New Jersey, and he was fucking cool as shit. Hung out at the bar with Sean a long time and fucking drank with the dude. Super cool, chill, like, accommodated anyone that asked for pictures and autographs. And one of the first things I said to him, and he cracked up at, was, I'm like, what happened to Chaz, you know? And he don't know what happened to Chaz. But, you know, I like Chaz against fucking Lightning Kid. I thought that shit was awesome. So.
Now I think the feud that kind of made the Lightning Kid, you know, for people to take notice, was his feud with Jerry Lynn. And I guess he had been wrestling Jerry Lynn even before that in the old PWA up in Minnesota. Well, what are your thoughts on the feud with Jerry Lynn?
Loved it. Loved it. They had a match last year, and it's fucking one of my favorite, maybe this year, one of my favorite matches. And it was really nice to see those guys after, you know, almost 20 years get back together and kick it old school like they used to, you know. And I love their matches. I didn't see them till too late. But they had PWA. I was familiar with the PWA in Minnesota. I remember they had great athletes like the Chippewa, Charlie Norris, who's like the worst fucking wrestler of all time. Like, I don't know if you know who Charlie Norris is. He had a cup of coffee in WCW in 1993.
Yeah, I remember.
But he fucking sucked. Yeah, but he was in that league. And, like, I always saw the name Lightning Kid, but it never registered with me until I actually saw him on Global. But, like, him and Jerry Lynn had, like, the work rate matches of, like, 91, 1990, you know, and so on and so forth. But, like, now the kid looks back on it and fucking hates those matches. But, like, at the time, they were pretty revolutionary, and I definitely remember both those guys had a pretty good indie buzz going for them at the time. And, you know, Waltman with his crazy dives and tombstone pile drivers and Liger bombs. And people don't realize, Will, like, now they've seen everything. But, like, back in the day, if you got to see a Liger bomb on TV, fuck, you fucking taped that. And you, like, watched it and you paused it and slow-moed it and, like, were in awe of it for, like, the next week. Like, oh, what a great move I got to see. I remember the first fucking time I saw a top rope Frankensteiner. Like the fucking one where you sit the guy on the top rope and the guy climbs up with his fucking dick in your face and does like the Frankensteiner and pulls you down to the mat. What a cool fucking move after you've never seen it before. Like you've seen a top rope Frankensteiner? Shit. I remember I saw Liger and Pegasus do that on like a clip on the Clash. And I was like, what the fuck was that? So, like, then, like, Johnny B. Badd did one, and Chris Candido did one. I literally can tell you, in a row, all the wrestlers I saw do a fucking top rope Frankensteiner from, like, 1992 to 1995. Because there was, like, fucking five or six or seven dudes doing them. And, like, when you right. got to see that on TV, it was such a moment, you know? Like, now everybody's so fucking jaded and fucking, oh, I've seen everything, fuck this, but, like, there was an appreciation for these high-flying moves and, like, seeing a Liger bomb on fucking Global. Shut the fuck up. That's crazy. Or a top rope fucking leg drop. Or, you know, he did lots of cool shit, but, you know, like, his leg drop was pretty cool. It was not Bobby Eaton-esque. His Bobby's is above all. But, like, it was, like, the third or fourth best I saw in those days.
Well, I think, too, what kind of, I know, because he would do the top rope leg drop, but he would also do, like, a running leg drop, like, kind of like a speedy version of just a,
yeah.
you know, the leg drop. And that was kind of what made his leg drop stand out, was how fast he was running when he would drop it, you know, or when he would fly, he would get fucking air.
Like a baseball slide leg drop, yeah, definitely.
Yes. You know, so let's talk about that, man. You know, for the last couple of shows that we've done, man, we talked about the guy's signature moves. And you know, Waltman is a guy who has no shortage of signature moves, man. So why don't you run through some of the list of signature moves, and, you know, we'll talk about, you know, the pluses and negatives about each move.
Well, the funny thing is he does have a shortage because he's smart enough to fucking just do what he looks good doing, and all his shit looks tight, you know? Like, he does, like, the fucking spin kick. He does, like, the Kawada kicks, the climb up to the second rope, kick the guy in the head, which I think he does even better than Kawada, and it was really cool that he took that to WWF. He does, Jesus, you know, it's just a lot of kick-based offense. He used to throw in different kind of suplexes, like Northern Lights or Germans or, you know, a tombstone pile driver, but, like, he just cut all that shit out because he didn't really need it, you know, and, like, ultimately, he really found his niche, in my opinion, when he just became, like, a bumping heel, you know, because there was nobody better at it than fucking X-Pac, and we will document some of those instances. I'm just going to throw it out now so I don't forget later, unless the show ends up closing, because I know this could go forever. But, like, there was a 10-man tag on Raw in 2000 with, like, Rock, Rikishi, Scott Taylor, Brian Christopher, and Cactus against, like, Malenko, Guerrero, Pac, Triple H, and that other guy. And, like, that match is, like, one of the best matches of all time because you had that hot-ass Texas crowd. They finally came back to Texas and were going nuts for wrestling. But that match, Rock gets a hot tag, and you will never see better pinball-style bumping than fucking X-Pac just bumping and feeding for the Rock's right hand. And, like, it was just a thing of beauty that I literally can picture in my head right now. And that, I'm a moves guy. I like moves, but it's always really special to me when I can remember moments where, like, dudes are, like, bumping and feeding or, like, flying out of the ring or, like, just taking a good right hand to the face, you know, and that was one of them, man. And Pac can really fucking do it up with shit like that. And, you know, he had some cool moves, but, like, I think the buzzkill, the fucking, the X Factor, you know, he had some pretty cool shit, that face buster thing.
Well, then he also had the Bronco Buster. Now, what's your thoughts on the Bronco Buster? Because you were talking about guys' dicks in your face.
I loved
earlier,
it when he did it, but I didn't like it when Ray does it, because when he did it, he's this fucking smart, smug fucking heel. He's putting his fucking dick in your face and laughing. And when fucking Ray does it, it's a spot that little kids clap and cheer for. So it's like, it loses its fucking value, in my opinion, when Rey Mysterio does it. But, like,
right,
when Rey was a fucking heel with the fucking filthy animals without a mask, I thought it was cool when he would do it because he'd be a little more dick about it. No pun intended. But, like, when Pac does it, man, that shit is in your face, and it's just so embarrassing. Like, I remember he said he felt bad when he did it to Terry Funk, you know? He disrespected the legend on his return to WWF in, like, 98, but... You know, Pac always says he's no angel, but now he's kind of turned shit around. And he is a genuinely good guy, in my opinion. But I like that he owns up to all the shit that he did do. You know what I mean? Like, he's
right,
really a prick and delusional about it. But he knows he fucked up. And, you know, hey, we all fuck up. So, anyway.
That
went on a rant there.
Yeah, no, it's no big deal. And, you know, I mean, I actually, you know, I've never liked the Bronco Buster. I mean, I understand the meaning behind it. I think you justified it pretty well. I never really cared for the move. I just thought that, you know, in a wrestling match, I mean, yeah, if it's something to show up your opponent, sure, but it didn't really, you know, I just didn't see the harm in it, you know,
One of the coolest Bronco Buster moments, and I got to throw this in there because I just talked about it, was that 10-man. Pac had Rocky in the corner, like, laying down, ready for the Bronco Buster, and he turned around to show the fans and away from the Rock, and he did his whole pantomiming fucking Blade show with his hand pushing the head down to his cock, and then he turned around, Rock nipped up and just clotheslined the shit out of Pac, and he went fucking flying.
Nice.
And the people went goddamn crazy for it. So, yeah, he knew how to use it to get heat, too.
Yeah, I think I like the counter, you know, where, like, he would jump in the corner, the guy would stick his leg out, and then, you know, kick fucking Pac in the balls, you know. I could appreciate that, you know, where, you know, he'd get his comeuppance where he's going to stick his dick in your face.
Yeah, you
get
it. He got it over as a degrading spot, and then he could just use it as a tool to get heat and fucking have babies make comebacks. So, yeah, I like it.
Yeah. And now, what about his finisher move, the X Factor, man? The you know, little face buster they did.
I'm not a big fan of it, but I thought he did it well. There's people that have done it since. I don't think do it very well, but you know,
yeah,
whatever.
It's kind
of
what
it's one
I
of those
think
late
too, 90, yeah.
It's one of those late '90s moves. There's a lot of weird late '90s moves, but he got it over. So.
Yeah, and I got to give him credit. You know, he'd do the full sit-down face buster where there, some guys, you know, would just, like, you know, like, kneel on their knees, like, you know, like a tombstone and give a face buster that way. It's like, come on, man, that's not really high impact.
Yeah, I'm one of
those
guys.
You have guys
like
Conan doing it, you know.
Yeah, I'm one of those guys that, like, if you have a shitty finish, if you can get that finish over, like, I'm not allowed to bitch about it because guess what? It's fucking over. You got to do it. It's like fucking John Cena's movie. Looks like shit, kind of, but you know what? The people fucking buy it, so fuck it. It's a cool finish, you know?
Yeah.
That's my outlook. Like, anyone that bitches about finishes, it's cool. It can be rationalized if it's not over, but if you get that crowd to their feet by doing a fucking eye poke in the face, God love you. So.
Now, before we get into his WWF career, what did you think about Waltman in Japan?
Loved it. I did not see much of it until, like, basically the last 10 years. But mm-hmm. I'd always heard about him going to Japan for Hamada's UWF, Universal Pro, which is Grand Hamada's promotion. It was a promotion that birthed Asai or Ultimo Dragon and, you know, Kendo and Gato and Jado when they were Bulldog KZ and Cooley. Something else, DT or Bulldog DT and Cooley KZ or whatever. Like, they all have these crazy ass names. And it basically morphed into Michinoku a little bit later. But, you know, Waltman and Jerry Lynn got a shot there, I believe, in 92. And they did really well. I don't think I have any footage of this. I'm sure there's some out there. And Pac even asked me about it when I saw it.
Yeah.
I was mentioning. It's one of the first things I brought up. And if I remember correctly, like, he might have brought up Emilio Charles. I don't know who the hell he brought up, but he brought up, like, a bunch of these old dudes who were wrestling, how they were fucking awesome. how, like, Nego Casas, I think, was involved with that for a little bit. Maybe he wasn't, but I'd like to think in my brain that he was. But I know he's got mad love for Hamada. And, it was a good promotion. And when he got the Super Juniors thing with New Japan, fuck, man. If you can find a better Super Juniors than 1993, you'll find it for matches, but, like, for a fun group of wrestlers, come on. You got Eddie Guerrero, fucking Dean, that guy, Lightning Kid, Too Cold Scorpio. There was lots of awesome wrestlers in that shit, man. And it was cool because Scorpio came home from Japan and wrestled Barry Windham on The Clash in June 93, and old Pac comes home and he beats Razor. So it was kind of neat. Those two guys kind of got big moments when they got back in the States. So I really liked it. And Eddie Guerrero against Lightning Kid from that tournament. Fuck. One of my favorite Eddie Guerrero matches. And really, really the last really high-flying Lightning Kid match. Like, if he didn't get the WWF gig, I'll bet you he had a nice little career in New Japan. So.
Well, I remember that tournament. And, you know, it is kind of stained in my memory because of that guy. But I think that was kind of a time when those guys that you mentioned, you know, that all kind of broke through and became stars in the U.S. later on, where they were all there, but they were still kind of honing their craft. They still hadn't, become, like, the perfect wrestler yet, you know. And
yeah, Eddie
was
close, though. Eddie was real close. Eddie fucking rocked that tournament, man. He was fucking debuting all his hot shit.
Right. And you know, like I said, it's not that they weren't good already. You know, even that guy was really good in 93, and Scorpio had a lot of standout stuff around that time. But it was just one of those things where you could tell that experience in Japan just did them a world of good when they finally came over here and broke through.
Yeah, well, that's another thing about Waldman a lot of people don't know. He was taught in, like, UWF, you know, he worked with Dean Malenko and Joe Malenko for years when he was training, you know, and you break in with the Malenkos, you usually know what the fuck you're doing. Well, unless you're Johnny B. Bad, but, like, I mean, shit, he did pretty fucking good, and he was a mark for Japanese wrestling. He's one of these fucking wrestlers that isn't afraid to admit he's a fucking mark for wrestling, man. Like, I'd love to get him on our show. I mean, I hope we can one day. He'll talk about anything. But, like, he's a fucking man. Like, he's not afraid. Like, he fucking name-dropped John D. Williams on the Yushu, which I fucking loved. I was like, fuck yeah, I love JDW. He's like, yeah, I hung out with Meltzer and John Williams. Like, you know John Williams? I'm like, hey, fuck, I do. You know, that's fucking awesome. Like, that they got to go over there to Japan and hang out and fucking talk shop. Good for him, man. So.
Yeah.
He's all right. I like Pac. I'm going to say that a million times, but, like, everyone says X-Pac sucks, and I think everyone's wrong, because I think he's fucking awesome, so.
Well, we'll work on getting him on the show, man. You know, maybe we can get him to do a show about fat guys or something, you know, something completely, totally off of, his expertise to see how he reacts to it. Or we can do it on something like lightweights or The Click, or I don't know. I think there's 101 things that if he's as big a fan as you say he is, that I'm sure we can come up with a topic easily for him to throw in. But let's move on. Let's move on to his WWF career. Now, the first time I had ever seen the guy was in WWF. I watched Raw one night. I hadn't watched wrestling in probably 3 years. And I turn on Raw, okay, and I see this guy, Razor Ramon, who I didn't remember seeing, and I see this little guy come along who's being picked on, and the announcers were just saying that this guy was going to get killed and squashed, and all of a sudden he wins. I'm like, holy shit. You know, this little guy just beat him, and the whole crowd was going crazy, and, you know, the birth of the 1-2-3 Kid, man. What'd you think about that initial feud with Razor?
Well, the real meat of all that was the fact that it wasn't his first WWF match. Like, he wrestled as
the It was the first match
I
saw.
Yeah, I know. But what I'm explaining, though, like, the way they did it was fucking really smart, because they had him get squashed by Mr. Hughes in a spectacular way. Like, that's a really awesome squash. And then he wrestled as the Kamikaze Kid and got his ass kicked again by somebody else. And then they fed him the razor, and he just got his fucking ass beat the whole entire match. And fucking
right.
Razor just didn't give him shit. And then Razor, you know, hits the fucking buckle, falls backwards. Fucking kid hits the sloppy moonsault, knee to the head, 1, 2, 3, runs the fuck out of there. And that's the fucking moment, dude. That's a moment that very few people, they don't forget that, you know? Like, that was a really great moment. And I actually think in hindsight, the WWF completely fucked up the 1, 2, 3 kid push after that. Like, nowadays, they'd be goddamn crucified for the way they treated that. But, like, he beat Razor, and then they had the rematch with that bag of money involved. And that was the match where he slipped and hit his head on the concrete, which he actually did numerous times prior to that. Like, he'd always be doing dives and kind of slip up. And he got a really bad concussion on a New England Indy one time. But he hit his head real hard, but then he left with the money. So then they had Razor turn good and kind of team up with the kid for a little bit. But, like, when even me, I'm, like, the biggest kid fan. I have a bunch of his comps. But, like, from, like, October to, like, December, he really wasn't doing fuck all or nothing. So it's like, you know, this guy who just got this dope debut, and he beat Razor Ramon. He's got all this babyface good guy heat with him, and they kind of let it die down a little bit. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, and the company kind of has a tendency to do that, you know, where you have a potential rising star, and you know, you either debut him or you put him over in a big way, and then you just have him kind of disappear into the mid card for a long time and not really kind of capitalize on that moment. Because like I said, I didn't watch wrestling for years, and you know, when I finally got back into wrestling, it was still a moment that I remembered. So you know, when he popped up again in the NWO, that hey, I remembered him. You know, and just
dude,
watched
you know
wrestling
what I said
one time.
When I saw him, one of his first wimpies, like he had some dope wimpies, Will. Like one of his first wimpies, he gave a guy, the first time I ever saw the La Mahi Straw Cradle, I fucking lost my mind, Will. I was like, what the fuck was that? You know, grab the arm, leg around it, oh, pinning Mike Sharp, fuck yeah, you know, and then you see the Mahi Straw Cradle. Dude, he should have beat Razor with the Mahi Straw Cradle. Like, imagine if, like, he had this special cradle that no one could kick out of. How much fucking heat they'd have had on that. Like,
right,
it,
that would be a time before anyone had ever seen it in the U.S.
Yeah, or, like, say he gets the flash pin with the moonsault. Like, I won't lie, that was a really cool way to end that match. Like, I'm not even sure you could make it better. But, like, maybe if he beat somebody else or something with the Mahi Straw Cradle and then they got that over. But, like, he kind of ditched that after a while, but Mahi Straw Cradle kicked ass. Like, every time I'd see Ultimo do it in, like, 95 and stuff, I'd be fucking losing my shit because I just always remember Kid doing it first. And it's funny because I'm sure that's where Kid got it, you know what I mean? Like, he probably
right.
got it in Universal Pro. And that's the thing. He's a fucking student, man. Like, he just bust out shit. Dude, the first guy I ever saw do a Rey Mysterio, throw the guy up in the air and he catches you with a Rana on the way down, was Bam Bam Bigelow on Lightning Kid at, like, Royal Rumble 95. Like,
wow.
I didn't see Ray Jr. until, like, probably late 95. Like, I saw him at that When Worlds Collide pay-per-view in 94, but he didn't do that. So I had no idea he could do half the run as he did. But, like, when I saw a kid do that, I was like, what the fuck? You know, who does that? Like, everyone we watched Tatanka and Bam Bam against Bob Holly and fucking Kid, and just watch in awe of Bam Bam working with the smaller guy and chucking him up in the air, and he almost killed himself on the way down, like, with the fucking Rana.
That reminds me of the show we did with Shima Zion, where he was talking about having a good base, you know, when you have a high-flying wrestler like that, and you know, like a guy like Bam Bam is like your ideal base for a high flyer like Kid, just to one, be able to catch him, but two, that if Pac wants to do a high impact move on him, you know, a guy like Bam Bam has enough flexibility for like a monster to actually be able to take it and sell
yeah.
it and make it look good, you know?
Yeah, I love that stuff.
Now, after his feud with Razor, he had a feud with Ted DiBiase. What are your memories of that feud?
You could kind of call it a feud, yeah. They wrestled on Superstars, and I think DiBiase had him pinned, and he just laid on him, and then Kid reversed it, into like a crucifix and pinned DiBiase, and that was like a big deal at the time. That should have been way fucking better. Like, I wish they had a feud or a couple house show matches that we could watch right now. Because DiBiase still had it. And it just would have been cool to have DiBiase. Like, they, in my brain right now, it seems like the perfect fucking match. Like, there's no match I'd want to see more that year than that one. But I don't remember being jazzed about it. And that was toward the end of DiBiase's WWF run anyway. Like, he was gone like the next month. So it couldn't have lasted long. And I was nowhere nearly as enamored with IRS against 123 Kids. And I like Mike Rotundo a bunch, but I hate IRS.
I know. I think Mike Rotundo had already long past his usefulness, at least in my eyes. You know, I'm not a fan of IRS or, you know, a lot of Rotundo solo stuff, man. I just can't dig into it. I mean, there's a few matches when we talked about the Varsity Club. When he was in the Varsity Club, I really liked him. But, man, besides that, I just have no use for the guy.
It was the Mr. Perfect type, wasn't it, Will?
Yeah, I think so, man. I think that just the whole suit threw me off, you know. Don't wrestle in a fucking tie. Now, what about his tag team with Marty Jannetty?
Oh, shit, that was that year, wasn't it? I just said he didn't do anything, but yeah, I guess he was with Jannetty. Him and Jannetty was kind of makeshift, thrown together to make stuff happen on Raw. I remember they feuded with Johnny Polo for a little while, which was some of Raven's very few WWF matches. I remember Jannetty wrestled Kid, I think, and Polo had them fight each other or something. And then they made up and they beat shit out of Polo, which was really good TV. Like, that'd be a good Nailer Con match, actually. But yeah, that was really good.
We'll have to look for that one and throw it on there.
Yeah, it was really good. And then, like, that went into Pierre and Jacques against Kid and fucking Jannetty, which on paper seemed like a badass match. But I don't really remember seeing any of their matches.
We're going to jump ahead and
like,
tell this
on the
story.
On the last show, someone's like, I could hardly believe Naylor's never seen this match or that match if he's such a fan of this era. I was really spotty. Like, I would watch all the TV, but I wasn't always going to get the pay-per-views. And, like, for whatever reason, I just don't play catch-up that well. Like, I don't go out of my way to be like, oh, shit, I've never seen Capital Combat 91. I better fucking seek that out. It just doesn't usually happen. Like, I realize it's surprising to people, but, like...
I don't think there is a Capital Combat 91, Rob.
Yeah, there's not. I know, but I'm just 90. But, like, I know, it's just... I'm weird like that, though. Like, I usually see shit when, like, Will sends me stuff, and I'm like, okay, I'll check this shit out. But, like, I really don't go that crazy trying to just be a completist and see every show. And some shows just really don't, you know, I'd rather buy a recent indie show, and that's sacrilege to say, but I'd rather buy a recent indie show with some cool shit on it than, like, a WCW pay-per-view that I just don't. Like, not all WCW pay-per-views that sound like it's, like, so insane to say that, but, like, what one's a good example? Like, Super Brawl 90. No, that's not going either. I'm sure there's an example.
Super Brawl 95, man. 95 was a pretty bad year for WCW pay-per-views.
Yeah, but that
doesn't count. Super Brawl 95.
I'm talking, like, 91, 92 even. Like, the 91 Halloween Havoc, okay? That's a good one. The Chamber of Horrors Halloween Havoc. Like, I would have killed to see that live on pay-per-view as a kid, but we couldn't get that pay-per-view when I was a kid because we didn't have it on our fucking backwoodsy goddamn cable system. But, like, now it's like, I want to watch PWG instead. Like, that's just me. But eventually, I will watch every wrestling DVD possible, and I'll try to supply more insight, but...
Yeah.
You know.
Well, let's jump ahead because I want to tell this story real quick. Is that you brought up the tag team with Marty Jannetty, and I was talking to a buddy of mine because you know I was thinking about doing the show and about you know matches that X-Pac or you know 123 Kid had had, and I was like, yeah, you know, wasn't he tag team champions with Bob Holly? And my friend was like, no, he was tag champions with Marty Jannetty, and I was like, no, it was Bob Holly. He never teamed with Jannetty, and he's like, he never teamed with Bob Holly. And come to find out, you know, he was in a tag team with both guys, you know, but it was just kind of during this period of wrestling that I was not into at the time, you know. So this, if I was arguing, I was arguing based on something I had read, not that I had seen. And so just in my head, this whole time, he was Bob Holly's tag team partner. Hello?
Yeah, they were both really forgettable, though, Will.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, like, that's probably why we each forgot one of the teams, you know?
Yeah, they'd put Kid in these makeshift teams, and they wouldn't really give him the steam they should have. Now, granted, he wasn't the best on the mic at the time either, but, like, they never really got – they never had matching tights. They never had a team name. It was just like, hey, here's this guy and this guy thrown together, and they're going to do a big upset, man. You know what I mean? So, like,
yeah.
I do think Holly and Kid against the Smoking Guns in 95 was the shit, though. They had some really good tag matches that are also probably comp worthy. But I remember, like, Kid would take so many cool moves from the Smoking Guns. That was probably my favorite Smoking Guns tag team match.
Yeah, I'm not a real Smoking Guns fan. So, well, let's backtrack. Talking about comp worthy matches, he had a match with Bret Hart on, I believe, on Raw. It was on Raw, right, in 1994?
Yep.
That was just a huge match. I mean, and we're going to talk more about it later on, but what was your thought on that match?
Loved it. That match is basically the WWF equivalent of Barry Windham and King Cold Scorpio. Like, it happened a year later.
Explain.
But what's that?
Explain. To talk to me.
Okay, it's basically a top guy elevating a young flyer as good as possible. People would say that they guzzled the young flyer, but no, they grounded them in a smart fashion and then gave the young flyer a bunch of fucking high spots at the end, and people fucking went apeshit because they didn't get it automatically. The young guys had to work for it, go about 15 minutes, and then finally when they uncork all the high spots, people go nuts. Also, Ultimo Dragon, Rey Mysterio from World War III. People hate that match because they're like, Dragon guzzled him. And maybe he did. But for me, I enjoyed it because Dragon had cool offense. He fucking fucked the shit out of Ray Jr. with a million different spots. Yeah, literally fucked the shit out of him. But, I mean, Ray didn't have shit. And then finally, Ray gets the comeback and just hits, like, a Silver King dive, another cool move, maybe a third cool move, and the kickouts were fucking stupendous. So, like, sometimes, you know, you get mad. Like, dude, don't ground the flyer. I've gotten pissed. I hate Pac against American Dragon, for instance. What a waste of a match. But sometimes you get that perfect formula, though, where the veteran brings that young dude up and just solidifies him as a star. And I don't think WWF or WCW capitalized on Kid or Scorp after those matches like they could have. However, does not take anything away from those matches. I remember that Kid-Gret match when I was me and Jack Evans were always good buddies, and when he was first getting into wrestling, I fucking made sure to send him that, and I'm like, dude, emulate that motherfucker, because he is absolutely awesome playing the underdog flying role. So.
No, I'll agree with you completely on
that.
I'll agree with you completely, man. In fact, that was one of the matches where, you know, after the initial X-Pac backlash hit, you know, where a buddy of mine, Charles, said, man, you need to watch this 1-2-3 Kid versus Bret Hart match. So I'm like, man, I'm kind of over WWF matches. You know, I want to move on. I want to watch some more ROH or something. You know, it's probably when ROH was hitting on all cylinders, probably 2005, 2006. And he's like, no, you really have to watch this match. It's amazing. And I watched it, man. I was just blown away. Just like you said, man, it was both guys kind of giving and taking. And, you know, Bret Hart, you know, who was clearly a top guy at the time, champion, just kind of given, you know, Kid enough to where you thought, man, Kid could pull off the upset, even though you knew in your heart of hearts there was no way in hell he was going to be champion. You know, you figure, hell, he did it once against Ramon. What makes you think he can't do it against Bret Hart?
Exactly, that's what made that work to me. Like, you did believe, because, like, he did do that before,
yeah.
And it's like, fuck.
Yeah, And that brings us to our next topic, which is also 94. That was the King of the Ring in 1994. And he actually went pretty far in the King of the Ring that year, man. I was looking at the list, and I guess not on the pay-per-view, but he actually advanced against Adam Bomb, you know, or one half of Chronic there. and then he advanced against Jeff Jarrett, and then he finally lost to Owen Hart. But what's your thoughts on his role in the King of the Ring that year?
I love that King of the Ring, and I thought Waltman and Owen, all 6 minutes of it, I went home that night so pumped after watching that match. And that was when I got the Observer a year prior, and I'm like, you know what? I'll bet you that's a five-star match. I'm like, I can't even imagine it not being a five-star match. And I was just completely in love with that professional wrestling match. And then I got the Observer, and Dave gave it like 3.5 or 3 3/4. And he's like, would have been better, but it was only 6 minutes. And I was like, what? I was like, that match was only 6 minutes? It didn't even dawn on me, just because there was so much cool shit in that 6 minutes that I was losing my mind. And I had the worst commentary crew of all time calling it, and it didn't even matter, because I was losing my shit watching that match. The kick that Kid takes.
Who was the commentary team?
Started that. Fucking Gorilla Monsoon, Macho Man, and Art Donovan, NFL Hall of Famer. So,
worst
commentary crew of all time. But, Owen kicks him so fucking hard at the start of that match. It's unbelievably great. He takes a belly to belly. There's a fucking Frankensteiner turned into a powerbomb. There's a beautiful fucking Northern Lights suplex, I believe. They kicked out the champ. And fucking Owen Hart was really good at eating Kid's offensive kick in particular and, like, really bumping well for them. So I love that match. And Owen Razor was really good, too, in the finals. But, like, Owen and Kid have a place with me. And those people, like, despise that match. No psychology. They just ran through shit. It was too short, and short matches suck. Man, I love it. I put that shit over like 90% of the Pimp Cruiserweight long matches. Like, it's just so great. And, you know, I wanted them to go longer too, maybe, in hindsight, but I enjoyed it. And anyone who watched that match again, King of the Ring 94, check it out.
What that match did for me, Rob, is it left me wanting more, where I thought, okay, this is the match where they tease what they're going to do in their 15-minute match. You know, and then I don't remember them ever having, like, a really long match that was kind of like a showcase of their talents. I could be wrong. I'm sure there's some wrestling historian out there that's like, no, they wrestled for 22 minutes on an episode of Raw. You know, but fuck, if I've ever seen it.
Hey, that guy's me. Like, here's what happened. They had another match, like, maybe at the King of the Ring, like, 3 years later. But this time, X-Pac, I think, was a good guy. No, it's the same thing. But this time, Owen was coming to the ring, and Pac hit him with the kick through the ropes. And I thought that was such a cool way to do it. You know what I mean? Like,
what year was that?
And I think it was 97 or 98, I think. King of the Ring 98.
Okay.
But it was really cool, if I'm not mistaken, that they opened that match. And if it wasn't that match, it was a different match they had in 98. But I thought it was a really cool ode to that. And the commentators didn't even recognize it. But fucking nerds like me who fucking don't forget this kind of shit, and I'm like, wow, who just did that? Remember June 94 when they thought I was like, losing it. Yeah. That match was nowhere near as good, by the way. Because it wasn't spotty, God forbid. But, like, I really liked the 94 match.
Well, you know, and now after 94, you know, I think, did he end the year in a feud with Razor Ramon, or did he begin 95 in a feud with Razor Ramon? Do you remember?
95 was when he got with Bob Holly as a tag team.
Okay.
And they wrestled Smoking Guns, and they wrestled Bigelow and Tatanka, and they lost to... Yeah, that's what happened. And then he kind of was just chilling for a little while, you know?
Yeah, I just remember that he had turned on Razor Ramon and became a heel.
That was way later. He had some matches with Yokozuna and with Bam Bam Bigelow on, like, Action Zone and stuff. Like,
right.
The match with Bigelow was really fucking good. Like, cat-mouse-type match, you won't find much better. Another cat-mouse-type match is Yoko, because Yoko was off and had taken Kid's kicks and, like, reeling, and not falling. And the whole match is based on, could this little motherfucker knock Yoko down? And if I'm not mistaken, Kid climbs to the top rope and Yoko catches him with a belly-to-belly on the way down, and he never even gets to do it, which is so fucking cool. Like, you have a whole match of us wanting him to do it, and then he doesn't do it. You know what? Sometimes the good guy doesn't fucking win in life. So, like, Yokozuna squashes him, and he loses. So he's got to come back and fight another day. Another really good kid thing was Kid and fucking Razor Ramon against Scott Hall, Kevin Nash. And,
yeah, I was saving that for my favorite matches at the end of the show.
Best tag team match of all time. Fuck all
I
the rest.
Go
Rock and Roll Express can go fuck off. So can the Midnight.
No.
That match.
No.
That match is fucking amazing. Like it. When I saw Pac the other month, I'm like, dude, do you remember in the fucking, what was it even called? Not the Mid-Hudson Civic Center. I forget the building. It's in New York, the White Plains, New York, I think. I'm like, remember White Plains? He's like, the masterpiece. And I'm like, yes! I'm like, he knows how fucking good it was. I'm like, yes! He's like, we all called it the masterpiece. I'm like, well, that was the fucking masterpiece. I'm like, and nobody knows about that. Well, maybe now more people do, but like, at the time, nobody really pimped that too much. What an amazing tag team match. You talk about bringing the people up and down, and they had lots of cool shit all throughout that match, but that's the match where I think the Click said, fuck the rest of this federation, we're taking this shit by the reins. And that's probably where they all got attitudes, unfortunately, but they deserved that match.
I'm glad you brought up the Click, because it always seemed that at the time that Waltman was the guy that everybody had to wrestle before they wrestled the other members of the Clique. Like, okay, if you can go with Waltman, then we'll have a feud with you, or we'll work with you. But if you can't, then we're not gonna try and put you over. We're not gonna work with you.
Yeah, Sean was the litmus test. You had to go through Sean, then you got the Razor, then you got the Kevin or fucking Michael. That was the way it went. And if you weren't primed by beating Waltman, or you couldn't work with Waltman, usually they shit on you, which is what happened with Shane Douglas. But you know, whatever. But I thought that was always a good deal because, you know, Waltman wasn't supposed to be the world champion. He was supposed to be the guy that maybe worked really hard and tried hard and just didn't get the big win. He had another thing with Skip the Body Donna when the Body Donna first debuted, or at least when Skip and Sonny first debuted. And I thought they had a really fun match on, what was it called? It was called Superstars. And we'll run through this because this will be an 18-hour show, if you know. He had a fight with Hakushi in SummerSlam 95. And I remember that was famous because the initial SummerSlam 95 card was the biggest piece of shit anyone's ever seen. And then WWF was reading The Observer or something one week, and everything changed. And they're like, fuck it, Gorilla Monsoon's the new commissioner, and we're going to do another ladder match with Shawn and Razor, and we're going to do Hakushi and 1-2-3 Kid. And I was like, what the fuck? They did everything but said we're going to improve the work rate in this card. It was unbelievable. So I was like, what the fuck? I ordered that show. It was the Pittsburgh Mellon, not the Mellon Arena, but the Civic Arena, I think, at the time. Incredible show. Everybody watched SummerSlam 95. It's really good. Kama and Undertaker was even there to show you how things were. But, yeah, really good show. Hakushi did the first, or one of the first, Space Flying Tiger drops on U.S. television. There's my memory again with these high-flying moves. But, yeah, I was just absolutely stunned. Really good match. And then I think after all that shit, you are correct that he did eventually turn on Razor and, like, late 90s. What was it? Yeah, late 95, I think he turned bad. I'm sure he forgot something, but fuck it.
And that's when he joined Ted DiBiase's Million Dollar Corporation, right?
Yeah, leading to the most badass fucking opening match in Survivor Series history, which was fucking Candido, X-Pac, was it Spicoli, and another good wrestler against, like, I think it was Horowitz, Jannetty. Man, I feel like a fucking shithead for not remembering after I just put the match over so much, but it was an unbelievable, like, junior weight match. And that was the match where Jannetty gave Candido the fucking powerbomb off the top rope, which was fucking crazy. But,
especially on U.S. TV at the time.
Oh, my God, yeah. Are you kidding me? Fuck yeah. So then that ended when Sid helped Waltman beat whatever other good guy he pinned. And then they were kind of putting Sid and Waltman together as, like, this fucking new-age evil Shawn Michaels type thing. And
it was Sid and the Kid, man.
Yeah, yeah, it should have been way bigger than it was, but I liked it while it lasted.
And then he didn't do too much in 96. You know, he was kind of on his way out. But he had the Crybaby match. Do you remember the Crybaby match?
Yes. I thought that match was really well worked. I don't like that gimmick historically. It was funny in like 82 in fucking, you know, Tulsa. But it just doesn't really, I don't think it plays for big audiences, but whatever. But I thought Ramon and Kid also had a couple matches. When Nitro popped off in like September 1995, WWF countered by putting all their top guys against each other. And I remember Kid wrestled Razor, and they had Razor beat Kid like 3 times in a row in one match or some shit. But I'd like to track that down, because I haven't seen it since it happened, but I'm sure that was pretty well done. But then they had, like you said, the pay-per-view match. He looked like a baby. They never really did anything with that. And then I remember he lost to, I believe, Shawn Michaels on Raw, leading into Mania 96. And
that was a really good match.
He broke his neck a couple times. Yeah, it was a really badass match. But he broke his neck a couple times in between all this shit. So, like, I think he was always perennially banged up. So then I don't know whether he failed the test. I don't think he did, but I think they volunteered to let him go because I think the heat on the quick was nuclear at the time. So they're just like, fuck it, we'll just let him go. But that ended up being kind of a mistake.
That's kind of strange because I'm trying to, you know, match the timeline in my head because I just watched the curtain call from Madison Square Garden and he was not part of the curtain call. So
no. I think he might have had a broken neck. That's probably why.
Yeah. But you know that if he had been in the arena that night, he would have been in that ring in some form or fashion.
Yeah, he might have been there. I don't know, but I'm just saying, like, I don't know what his deal was, but he would have been. He should have been if he wasn't. What the fuck am I talking about? Anyway, go ahead, Will.
No, I was going to say, we talked about the Lightning Kid. You brought up him as the Kamikaze Kid, you know. We had the 1-2-3 Kid. And then like you said, I guess he took time to heal. He signs up. NWO is blown up, and he debuts on Nitro. Man, you told me I had to talk about his debut on Nitro. So you tell me why I have to talk about this debut.
Yeah, he just showed up out of nowhere, and they didn't give him a name. But he's sitting in the audience wearing, like, sunglasses and a bandana and a leather jacket wearing a Jim Morrison T-shirt. And it said Break On Through on it, which is interesting. But I liked it. I thought it was good. I didn't know where they were going with it. But
I almost immediately knew he was going to be an NWO member. I mean, to me, that wasn't even in doubt, you know, when you figure who was in the NWO, you know. I don't know how you didn't know where it was going.
Yeah, and then they're like, oh, next week there'll be 6. And I'm like, what's 6? What's that all about? And then I realized that there was numbers, and that made sense kind of. But then people said it was because 1, 2, and 3 adds up to be 6. I don't know really why they named it 6.
We got to find out. We got to find out the background on that. You know, 6 member, 1 plus 2 plus 3, man.
When they're like, 6 is going to be on Nitro, I'm like, oh, shit, they got the chick from Blossom. I'm like, I didn't fucking know. Like, what kind of name is 6? There's a fucking reference. I think how many people listening will get that one, though? But anyway.
Only people who are over 30, you know.
God damn it. God bless Mayim Bialik. But, dude, that 6 chick has the fattest ass now, man. She's banging. She's in, like, King Magazine and shit. Fuck.
What?
Jenna Von Oy, I think, is her name. But, yeah, I'm down with 6. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay.
Sorry,
well, then,
to take that down a creepy turn.
After he joins the NWO, you know, he's part of the NWO skits. He's with the Outsiders, you know, hanging with that crew. And then the first memorable match he had was the Halloween Havoc 1996 Chris Jericho match.
Yeah, I liked it. He reined Jericho in, man. Yeah, I remember being pissed at the time because it wasn't this aerial assault type affair. But looking back on it, it's a very good match. You know, they did a lot of good shit.
Yeah. And then after that, I don't really remember him having a lot of, like, really standout matches, you know. I mean, it just kind of maybe it was the Mac, I don't know. But at the time, you just thought, okay, if you're going to bring Waltman in, you're going to bring him in to kind of be your work rate guy, to be your guy that has, like, great matches with all these other Flyers and all these other guys that they had at the time. And I don't know, I was not as excited about him in WCW, you know, wrestling-wise, as I was, like, watching all the old WWF stuff.
See, I was. I thought he was, like, the worker of the Cruiserweights. He wrestled Ray. He carried Ray. He wrestled Dean Malenko. I thought that him and Dean had a good rapport. He was always involved. They didn't have him against all the luchadors like you'd think they would. I don't think he wanted to wrestle a lot of the lower grade, like, Cruiserweight guys, because whether it's popular or not, there was a fucking stigma. You don't want to be fucking typecast as one of those guys. So he would wrestle Dean, and, like, I remember the Guerrero ladder match was a goddamn disaster. I know Pac hates it, but, like, you know, he was good. He was always the promo guy. Like, I thought my whole crew in college at the time, when everyone would be hanging out watching Nitro in the fucking, you know, study lounge, we would love when Pac and Hall and Nash came on the screen. It was just fucking hilarious, man. They had that legit, like, real-life buddy chemistry that you just can't fucking fabricate. So I always thought they were great. He didn't really need to wrestle. When he did stuff, he would do, like, the Ric Flair feud. I thought his shit with Flair was really good. He slapped him legitimately one time. There was that fucking sick man with Kevin Green and Piper and Flair where Hall and fucking Nash and Pac wrestled him. That was really good. I really liked the Rey Mysterio matches, though. There were a couple Rey Mysterio matches, and they were unlike most of the Rey Mysterio fucking fireworks matches of the time where Rey didn't really get all that much in, but it was as if, like, that Bret Hart-Pac match stayed in Pac's brain where he was like, I'm the bigger guy now, and I'm not going to let this guy get that much, but he'll get something at the end, then we'll cut him off and fuck him over after the match. And that's exactly what they did. But, like, I really liked it. Like, at the time, I probably wasn't as hot about it, but now that I've looked back and checked these things out again, I just think that it was a minimalist philosophy where he wasn't doing as much as he could, but he was in all the right places, and he would cut the guys off at the right time and get people to fucking say, dude, you suck. And I just thought he was really good at it.
Now you brought up the Flair feud. Now, at the time, you know, I remember the big debate, because, you know, when you talk about the NWO, when you talk about WCW, it's all about pecking order. And like you said, you know, he probably didn't want to be there wrestling the Benoits and the Guerreros and the Malinkos and the Mysterios and Jerichos. But, you know, at the time, I remember watching it. You know, I didn't have any observer tell me I wasn't tuned in on the internet. I just remember thinking, God, Flair's going to kill this guy because that's the pecking order. Flair's the better wrestler. Flair's the veteran, you know. So, and Six is the cruiserweight. So, to me, my perception was always that Flair should have just eaten them alive. And looking back, you know, probably a good thing that he didn't. But at the time, I just thought, man, you know, why isn't Flair just dominating this guy? So I know what kind of Flair fan you are, so, you know, I know you're going to disagree.
Yeah, he kind of did, though. Like, I don't think Pac ever beat Flair. I think Pac was basically running from him most of the time. I think their best stuff was when they were doing promos, because that was when Pac was finally finding his voice, so to speak, and he'd make a prick out of Flair. And, like, I thought that was always good. Dude, Pac and that guy, by the way, had an amazing match.
Pac and who?
That match was incredible. Until you referenced it, when you said his name right there, I forgot that match even happened. But, yeah, man, Pac and him had a really awesome match. So, good for them.
Yeah, and then I guess shortly after there, you know, he injures his neck again, and he's out. And then Bischoff fires him. And then what did you think about, like, the shoot comments about, you know, firing Six and, you know, letting Six go?
I just remember the weekend he got fired. I remember Hall and Nash were saying they're going to quit in the Observer. And I'm like, fuck, you know, this could change everything. Why'd he get fired? And no one ever really knew why he got fired, I guess. But, like, Bischoff now says he just fired him to fuck with Hall and Nash. And that was basically the beginning and the end of WCW. Because Hall and Nash then didn't give a fuck and start fucking around and were never the same. Not like they were goddamn super workers to begin with, but I honestly think that when Pac got fired, they're like, all right, we'll fix your fucking little red wagon. And then Bischoff just thought that, like, 5 months later, he could bring Pac back and Hall and Nash would be happy and Pac would be thrilled to come back. And that was a fucking shitty thought, because then Pac's like, stick this shit up your ass. I'm going to one of my other friends. And Hall and Nash were pissed off for the rest of the time. And, well, we all know what happened.
Well, yeah, I even remember, you know, Nash and Hogan, when they were teasing their dissension, where Hogan would just say point blank, you know, Six wasn't cutting the mustard, brother, you know, and I was like, wow.
Dude,
you know?
So
then,
lame. Hulk Hogan is so fucking lame. Like, if he's like the lamest fucking wrestler ever. Like, he always would try to be cool, like Hall and Nash were at the time, and he was like, used, like, worn out, like, phrases that the singer Sting would use back in 86 or something. It's like, okay, cool, dude, awesome. Like, come on, fuck you, Hulk Hogan, he sucks. But when fucking Pac came on WWF TV and fucking shit all over Hogan and Bischoff, I was fucking dying. Like, that was like an impactful debut, too. Like, he came out like the day after Mania with Triple H, fucking shit all over Hogan, which he later said he was sorry for. He likes Hogan and all, so that's cool. It doesn't seem like he was very malicious, although he should have had some malice in him the way they fucked him on that. Like, who breaks your neck working for these assholes and they fire you just because you're playing game? Okay. But,
I agree. If Bischoff actually fired him just to fuck with Hall and Nash, that's fucked up, man. You're fucking with the guy's livelihood, with his career. You know, and that's kind of one of the things that, if anything, would make me bitter about wrestling is that kind of politicking. You know, it's one thing to fire a guy because he's not good in the ring or because he's unreliable. And, you know, I don't know all the backstage stuff. But it's another thing just to fuck with him just to send a message to someone else, you know, when he didn't really deserve it. You know, it's kind of like the same way Steve Austin got fired. Steve Austin got fired because he got injured in the fucking ring and they fired him, you know. So, you know, fuck dudes in the back office. That's all I got to say.
Yeah, so he came back on Raw. I really thought that was awesome. I still get chills watching that promo. Like, when he comes out, like, I thought the promo was kind of stupid when Triple H was like, you look to your buddies, you look to your friends, you look to the clique. And I'm like, oh, God. Like, Triple H can kill anything for me now. Like, I thought maybe it was cool at the time, and now I'm looking back at it, and he comes off like a fucking asshole. But I thought it was cool when Pac came out. And seeing Pac and Triple H in China in the ring after all that's been gone down there is hilarious. But, you know, I thought it was cool.
You're going to find a way to bring that up.
His promos really, he had so much fire and fucking piss and vinegar in his body when he cut that promo. And, you know, he really came a long way with his promo.
Now, the first feud that he had as a member of DX was with the Nation of Domination, and that's feuding with Owen Hart again, feuding with The Rock, tag teaming with Triple H against Rock and Owen and D'Lo and those guys. What did you think about that period?
Oh, I loved it. I thought X-Pac worked as good as anyone against The Rock, worked as good as anyone against D'Lo, and worked as good as anyone against Owen. I thought he was perfect. You take him out of that fucking equation, and that shit's no one near as good.
Yeah,
and it was, I fucking love their matches. So.
Well, and this was also around the same time that you had the DX invade WCW. You know, this is really when, you know, it got pretty intense in the war, right? WWF's taken over. They're beating them in the ratings, and now they're kind of rubbing salt in the wounds by going to their corporate headquarters, by going to the arena across the street, you know. And riling up the fans and then airing it on TV. What'd you think about that whole deal?
See, I thought that was kind of dick. Like, I know they did it and all, and it was supposed to be funny, but it was almost like they were trying too hard. Like, no one could ever read me, but, like, I didn't like that. Like, I just thought, like, it was stupid. So, I don't know. I didn't really care for that because they didn't really – I mean, I realize it was the war and both sides did all kinds of shit like that, but I just thought it was a little top. A little too much. I think I don't know. I mean, it worked. I'm not going to say
it
worked.
Oh, yeah. It was clearly unprofessional, you know.
Like, I think that place is in Virginia. Because I remember driving by it last year, and my friend Sin's like, yo, man, he's like, that's where Pac was, and they did the invasion. I'm like, what? He's like, yeah, it was that building. I'm like, fuck, let's go there, and we didn't. And I was like, that sounds awesome. But, yeah.
And then after that Nation feud, man, the highlight for me, at least besides his debut in 1998 WWF, was his hair versus hair match against Jeff Jarrett at SummerSlam. And I really love that because I fucking hate
that.
Jeff Jarrett, man. I fucking hate Jeff Jarrett. So
yeah, I don't like Jeff Jarrett
either. Anytime you see someone better of him.
Yeah, I hate Jeff Jarrett too, but I'll tell you what, the guys that got the best out of Jeff Jarrett were Shawn Waltman, Shawn Michaels, and Razor Ramon. Like, those are my favorite Jeff Jarrett matches. It's funny because it's all the Click guys, but I thought those matches were always the best.
No, I won't argue with that. At least for WWF Jeff Jarrett. I like a lot of Memphis Jeff Jarrett stuff. But, you know, it's a different time.
Oh, yeah, and Moondog Spot.
Different character. Yeah, Moondog Spot. yeah, exactly.
Who is not in the Click that we know of? I don't know. Maybe.
No, I don't think so, man. I think he was probably a little bit too old for the Click guys at the time. You know, because they were
Larry
only in their
Latham
late 30s and 40s.
The Click would have been amazing. Like, they just bring him out. The new member of the Click, Larry Latham. And he just comes out, like, in his fucking shitty jeans. He's so badass. Dude, I love Larry Latham. Dude, that's a story for another day. But, dude, I was such a big fan.
Yeah, we'll have to do, like, a Larry Latham Moondog show someday. Man.
Yeah, Moondog Spotty, man. Spotty was, like, a wimpy guy when I first started watching WWF in, like, 85, 86. And always pissed me off because he was, like, a wimpy guy with, like, a gimmick. And that was crazy to me. That why is he a wimpy guy? But anyway, I'm sorry to digress.
Well, we're good. You know, I mean, you and I have kind of different opinions on this, but I know, like, the rest of his WWF run, I wasn't really a fan of it, except in spurts, because, like, I know, like, him and Kane formed a tag team. I was not a fan of that. I mean, I can only hope that you were not a fan of the Kane tag team.
I thought they had a funny dynamic. I can't lie.
Yeah, see, I didn't care for it all. And what I do remember liking at the time, though, was his Shane McMahon feud and, like, his match at WrestleMania, which is otherwise a pretty bad WrestleMania, besides the Rock Austin match. What'd you
think? I liked him and Shane. That was really good. I thought that's, like, Bigelow carrying LT levels of great job on Pac's part. He did really good.
Yeah. Now,
dude,
I mean,
Pac should have had, like, a fucking feud with Joey Abs. That would have been badass.
I guess Joey would have been a much better choice. But, you know, Joey Abs clearly wasn't going to get any kind of rub like that at the time, you know. But, I mean, let's face it, dude. 1999, WWF sucked. It was not good wrestling
overall. Yeah, I wasn't a big fan of this. I was a fan of maybe some of the stories at the time since everything they did got over. But looking back on it, I would never want to watch it again.
I've watched some of it, and I'm actually working on an Attitude project, you know, where I cover the entire Attitude era, and it's hard stuff to watch, man. It's not fun, you know. I mean, and then he turned heel against Kane in late 1999. He reforms the DX after, you know, having a breakup with DX. I mean, it was just, you know, that was the kind of the time when heel turns and face turns were just at their worst. Where a guy would be heel for 4 weeks, then he'd go back as a face, and then he'd turn on his new partner 2 weeks later. It was just the worst of, like, Russo booking, man. And I was done with it. You know, I couldn't watch it, man. And then he finally teamed with Road Dogg. And so what were your thoughts on the X-Pac Road Dogg team? Or even as just on Road Dogg the wrestler?
Dude, I don't even remember the X-Pac Road Dogg team.
No,
I love
Road
Dogg, but I don't remember that shit.
Well,
yeah, I don't remember it.
Well, that tells you how important it was, right? So moving on, Rob. You know, then I do remember, though, that he did have a match with Jericho on a pay-per-view in late 99. I want to say it was Unforgiven 1999. I could be wrong. Do you remember the X-Pac Jericho match?
I think that might be the really famous match where the fans are bouncing a... What are they doing? What are the fans doing? I remember this.
I'm pretty sure they're bouncing a beach ball around and everyone's paying attention. And so at the time, I don't remember who locked who in the headlock, but they just sat in the headlock waiting for the fans to get that shit out of their system. You know,
dude, that's a classic match for that outside of the ring shenanigans. Like, that's one where the fans fucked the match, but they kind of made it too because everyone remembers that match. But that's unfortunate.
Right.
It wasn't a really good match that I remember, but I remember some really funny chants. And I hate when fans fucking put themselves over, but I do remember being mildly amused at whatever happened there.
And then he has another injury. You know, and I think that's the biggest tragedy of Waltman. And, you know, let's face it, when you work a high-impact style like you did for so many of those early years, that's what's going to happen, man. Those injuries are going to pile up. But then when he came back, and we talked about this before, Rob, this is where you and I really disagree, and that's on X Factor. And so why don't you tell the people, okay, why you think X Factor was a good unit?
Now, wait, before X Factor, he had fights with, like, I think he teamed up with, like, he fought with, like, Eddie and Jericho and that guy and, like, I think he was involved in, like, a lot of the Cruiserweight feud stuff. Spike Dudley he had good matches with. Like, he had really good matches with, like, the entire roster.
But X-Factor was already formed at the time.
Are you sure?
Well, no.
I mean, I might be wrong. I just know I have an X-Pac comp and I remember him. Because I remember Credible was the guy that interfered in one of the Jericho matches. And came back with Pac. So,
okay.
Like, I think it was
I remember that they had the four-way challenge at No Way Out 2001 where it was X-Pac versus that guy versus, I want to say, was it Jericho and Eddie? Fuck, dude, I don't remember.
Yeah, something
now,
like that.
Now my timeline's all fucked up.
Yeah, and, like, he had good matches with Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy, like, you go back and you watch Pac shit at the time, and it was fucking phenomenal. And then Pac stuff in the when the ECW dudes came, I think there was a match once where it was like Pac and RVD and Canyon against like Pac and who the fuck was he team with? Pac and Tajiri or some shit. And Pac had good matches with Kidman, and he had great matches with Tajiri, like. Pac's run in,
yeah,
like,
that,
2000.
Yeah, that's 2001. We're talking about, like...
Yeah, 2000 and 2002 it would have been. He was fucking on fire. But the X-Factor, whenever the fuck it happened, I don't remember. But, like, I liked it. Like, I know Pac on interviews says that everyone hates that fucking terrible Cracker song, but, like, it was different. Like he said, like, he didn't necessarily love the song either, but everything was so aggro at the time and all that new metal bullshit. So he's like, we wanted to get as far away from that, so then when we came out, people would know it wasn't the usual shit. And I don't know. I think that's when that fucking term X-Pac heat, that term that doesn't exist, popped up. But, like, whatever. Like, I thought they were okay. And, you know, being around Pac all that time, you know, Bernard's now one of the best fucking wrestlers in the world. I think he's fucking amazing. And Justin Credible, as I have said on other podcasts of ours, great guy, and I think he was fucking awesome in the ring. I know everyone has different thoughts on that, and I'll never change those thoughts, but he gave it his all every night. He was great at taking fucking Ray Stevens bumps and fucking cool shit, and he would bump like crazy. Another thing, he's like Pac. He didn't have much spectacular offense, but when it was time for him to bump, man, those people would get up for that shit. So, yeah, ultimately, I can't even tell you an X-Factor match that was really awesome that I remember, but I'm not against the idea on paper. Like, you got a big, not a big untrained guy, but a big green guy, and you stick him with two good little workers, you know, it should have been better than it was. But people never got past the song, unfortunately, so it was seen as a failure.
Hey, just so you know, Rob, while we've been on the air here, I have been trying to find that Uncle Cracker song. Right? So I'll admit I didn't look too hard, but I did try to find it for you. You know, I did want to play it before, you know, we went out today. But, you know, we'll just have to wait another time, dude. Sorry. Apologize for that one.
Damn
but,
it.
I know. Well, that one in the Bullet Boys, dude. I'm on the case.
Yeah, Screwed Up In You by the Bullet Boys. Best song ever. But, yeah. But, yeah, that wasn't the best team. But, like, he had a really good time there and had wrestled a lot of them dudes and did well. And he ran the gamut and wrestled all those little wrestlers. And, you know, I said 2002, but was he even there in 2002? No. I think he was gone by 2002.
I don't know. I do know that in 2001, yeah, he was there in 2002 because he was part of the New World Order.
Oh,
he joined the New World Order because the New World Order debuted in 2002.
Okay. Because he got fired in the middle of all that shit, and then
right.
he did that run and wrestled for 3PW and had the miracle match with Sabu at the arena that I'm still going to try to find. But him and Sabu had a couple matches for 3PW. Now, I was going to all the Ring of Honor shows at the time, but he had a bang-up match with fucking Sabu at that 3PW show. I hate to it sucks because I wish I could tell everybody what date to look up to find that show because he did have two matches, and one wasn't good and one was amazing. So,
Well, didn't he have matches with Sabu, like in the indies and the early 90s with Sabu? Like
him
when
and
he was
Sabu
light naked?
In 1993, right before the Razor Ramon match, had a show that's commentated by Mick Karch, and Sabu is managed by Oliver Humperdinck, if I'm not mistaken. And yes, that was one of my favorite fucking matches. Kid Juice is a gusher. Sabu is in the prime of Sabu's career. Now, both of them now say they look back on the match and hate it because it's fucking psychologically fucking damaged. But, like, I really
well, I
enjoyed
Sabu
it. And, like, it put them both on the map, kind of. Like, those guys were both, like, peaking at, like, being insane high-flying dudes. And that's a lot of fun. And Mick Karch is really great at conveying legitimate enthusiasm watching a match. Because he was losing his shit watching that. So look that one up, too. I think it was called NWA Grand Slam. It's also a really good Eddie
right.
Gilbert Road Warrior Hawk at the main event, if I'm not mistaken. But, yeah. So Sabu and him, like, you know, 12 years later or whatever, 13 years later, got to have another match in the arena. And it was pretty good, though. I will track down. So.
And now, like, you brought up this indie stuff that he was doing, like, with Sabu in 2003, man. The only time I remember seeing his name in print or online was his run in TNA in 2005. Did you see any of that?
Yeah. I'm good buddies with Alex Shelley, and I remember Shelley was super pumped about getting to wrestle with Pac. Pac was going to be his tag team partner. Because that was when they were going to do, like, the old school guys and new school guys tag team tournament. And
okay.
they're making a young guy with a veteran, which is a great idea. And I think that shit just went south really fast. And it ended up with Kid no-showing or something, and they never got to really do it, I don't think, if I recall correctly. But, you know, Waltman and fucking, you know, Alex Shelley would have been a badass match one-on-one. It would have been a badass tag team match if they got partners, you know what I mean? But, like,
right.
Pac's a guy that a lot of the young indie guys really look up to, man. Like, maybe not some of the things he does behind the scenes, because that was one of those deals where he just went AWOL in FIP Gabe's promotion. I know Waltman went down there and wrestled a couple times. And, like, sometimes he'd just show up and he'd wrestle gratis, if I'm not mistaken, and just show up and, like, can I be on your card? You know, I'll prove myself. And, like, he'd do good sometimes, and then sometimes he would not be you know, ready to wrestle, so to speak. So, like, he's always struggled, but now from what I'm told, you know, I think Pac is, he's put all that shit in the past and he's putting his best foot forward and, you know, good for him, you know.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Well, you know, like I said, I haven't really seen or heard much of that, you know, I haven't really seen any of the stuff he did in Mexico or anything, so I can't comment on that. But, you know, like we do every week, Rob, I want to end on a positive note and talk about the favorites. Now, last week, you didn't get to give us your favorite Steiner matches. Now, do you want to save that for another show? Do you want to do that? Or
Real quick, let me say this. Pac had a good run in Mexico. I don't think the Mexicans that he wrestled with were very good. I'm going to get tons of shit for this, too, but I think a lot of the guys in AAA suck. And I think Jack Evans wrestling in AAA has made Jack Evans way worse. I think Jack Evans looked a million times better in Ring of Honor. Like, and it's not that, quote-unquote, Jack doesn't get Lucha either. But anyway, that's another story for another day. But
yeah.
I want to say Pac and who's that guy? Eric Young had a really good little match, too. Remember when all them dudes came back this year? Right before Pac got let go, they did a match on TV, and I watched so little TNA. But they did a match where it was Anything Goes Bunkhouse match. And it only went, like, 5 or 6 minutes. But Kid busted his ass, man, and he looked like in his prime good against Eric Young. So that's another good match for people to look out. I don't think Mark for Bunkhouse matches anyway. But hey, okay,
yeah.
I'll do my three Steiner matches. My three Steiner favorite matches, and people now are like, what are they talking about? Well, if you didn't see the last show, I didn't get to name my Steiner matches. Favorite Steiner matches, Nasty Boys match, number one. Second favorite Steiner's match, I'm going to say probably Heavenly Body, SummerSlam 93. Third favorite Steiner's match, God, it's so difficult, man. Third, I'm going to say, is a tie, and it's a three-way tie. It's the Road Warriors from Nitro in 1996, because that's a great, like, big dude beat each other up match. Hase and Muto from any one of the Tokyo Domes. And the third favorite is... space now, Naylor. You're doing so good. The third favorite is Owen and Brett, which I don't think I said yet. So,
okay, yeah, that's what I ended the show with last week. I was like,
right,
Rob Naylor's not here. My favorite match is Owen and Brett versus the Steiners. Bye. You know, so
yeah, I got to put the Nasties one up there at top though, because that one was just such a realistic brawl, man. Those guys,
yeah,
Nasties were hungry for a job with the WWF at the time, so they were working hard on their way out. And Steiners were hitting the peak, and everybody, his blood, and a great crowd, gave you a cool move. So, yeah, that one. Oh, yeah. Fuck, I forgot my Studer and Ling tag team match. That's all. They're four-way tied for third place. I can't even put one ahead of the other. So we'll put Luger and Sting and Steiner in third place, too.
Okay. Well,
stop
now,
me
let's,
now,
let's,
they'll
let's
be
move
like,
back
they'll
to Xbox
like
now.
Six,
I know you'll
place.
Talk about
yeah.
the Steiners for an hour, so I'm going to cut you off. So let's
right,
get back to X-Pac. And let's talk about your favorite angles with X-Pac.
When he came back to WWF and he cut the promo.
Okay.
I thought he was always funny in the skits, like when he was Mark Henry. It was Mark Henry in the skit, pretending to be in the Nation. And when he was Ric Flair, I thought that was funny. So
you actually liked those when the NWO and the...
I love the parodies.
DX did those parodies.
I don't get
parodies.
All fucking butthurt over the parodies. I think they're hilarious. I think they're really good. So I like it.
You know what? I'm going to agree with you, man. When Kevin Nash was my spot, your spot, my dog spot, man, I was dying. I didn't know that the internet protocol at the time was you weren't supposed to like that shit. I was fucking dying.
Yeah, we all got a good kick out of it. Like, Arn Anderson's not been a smart ass to fucking 95% of the fucking people ever in the business. Like, he's fucking untouchable. Come on. I love Arn, but come on, man. He's not above ribbing. Anyway, I thought all the fucking outsiders promos were gold. They're not really angles, but they count as angles for me. So I'll just go with that.
All right. I think mine is obviously the upset of Razor Ramon when he debuted as the Kid, and then became the 1-2-3 Kid. That's my favorite angle. And then let's move into favorite matches. My favorite match with Waltman is the Bret Hart match. It's just, like I said, one of those perfect storm matches where everything Bret did right and everything Kid did right just came together in one match. And then let's finish it with your favorite matches, Rob.
I'm going to give, like, seven. I'm going to say...
Give us 10, Rob. In fact, you need to help me make my comp, my Sean Waltman tribute comp.
Yeah, I like... The first one's obviously the Masterpiece Tag Team match. The second one is a match with Tajiri he had, I believe, SummerSlam. SummerSlam 2001, I think. He had a really good one with Kidman, which also might have been a pay-per-view. Maybe it was SummerSlam, I don't know. He had a great match with Eddie Guerrero as the Lightning Kid in Japan, New Japan Super Juniors 93. He had a really banging-ass match with fucking Ray Jr. in WCW. He had a really good match recently with Eric Young that people should check out. Fuck, don't stop me. I'm on a roll here. Let me think.
No, man, keep rolling, Rob.
Fuck. I know there's way more. He had a fucking... God, I'm spacing. Why is this happening to me? Man, there was one I really wanted to point out. I recently put on one of my comps. Shit. 6, 1, 2, 3, 10. One, Two, Three Kid and Bam Bam was really good. I don't know. I can go on and on. Basically, I have, like, someone gave me a comp with, like, fucking 57 X-Pac matches on from, like, his WWF debut to when he left the WWF. And I just love it. I watch it all the time. His matches are easy to watch, man. Like, he just, it's never boring. He just gets in there and gets his shit in, man. The 10-man tag from Texas. Come on, man. He was out of control on that one. 10-man tag from Texas from 2000 from Monday Night Raw. That's a really good match. Yeah, that'll be it for now. But
Jerry Lynn from last year. Did you mention the click tag match? Did you mention the click tag match?
The masterpiece was the first match. Yeah, the masterpiece was the first match.
Okay. You're shooting them out White so quick, man. I must have missed it.
Yeah. Oh, the Owen Hart match with King of the Ring. You know, the shit. Yeah, there's so many of them. He had some good ones with Diesel. He brought it, man. I have nothing but nice things to say about Sean Waltman. He's awesome. I'm glad he was someone we talked about on the show.
Well, hopefully, when people listen to the show, they'll be willing to give him not a second chance, but kind of reevaluate his career and maybe rewatch some of his matches, some of the ones that we mentioned, and kind of gain a new appreciation. Because, you know, I'll admit, I was one of those guys, you know, after X Factor came out, where I was like, okay, Waltman's done. But then, you know, when I rewatch old Waltman matches, I'm just like, man, I like this guy. I like watching him work. I like watching him wrestle and you know, kind of being an asshole, and I respect that, you know. So hopefully people actually get a chance to just kind of rewatch some of that stuff and appreciate it and appreciate what he put his body through, you know.
Yeah, his YouTube's really good. If you get an opportunity to get a hold of the Sean Waltman YouTube that recently came out, check it out. He's pretty good. Lots of good stories. He's funny, and he comes across as a good dude by the end of it. So check it out.
Oh, that's cool. Hey, Rob, is there anything else you want to say before we head out?
I got nothing. I can barely talk anymore, man. I thought that's got to be a record for someone talking continuously about X-Pac. But
well,
I love him, man. He's a good dude.
Well, hey, man, I did find an X-Pac song for you, okay, that I got to download while we were talking on the show. So we're gonna close it out with whichever song this is. I don't know if it's a famous one or not. I just know I searched for it on the internet. I searched for X-Pac, and this song came up. So hopefully I'll go and watch some old Sean Waltman matches, and we'll talk to you next time. Take care.
Suck it.
Big noise!
X-Pac!
You think you can tell us what to do?
Yeah.
You think you can tell us what to wear?
Yeah.
You think you better?
Yeah.
Well, you better get ready to bow to the master.
This is Q-Tip with Sonos. I spent my life collecting thousands and thousands of albums, man. Now the kid down the block has the same collection I do. Am I mad? Am I upset about it? Nah. Alright, maybe a little. Control all your music with one app with Sonos. Find out how you can Sonos your home by clicking the banner below or visit Sonos.com.